Hi, this is Dave Sella.
Hi, Dave. Welcome back. This is Ashley. I think we are going to get started here shortly. I think there's a couple folks that are trying to still get dialed into the line. So just bear with us a couple minutes as we get folks situated here, and we will get started here in just a second.
Ashley, is that Ashley?
Yes.
This is Sherry. Does the mobile, if I've got my phone for the voting and the screen open on my computer for the slides and stuff, does that work?
You mean to do the voting from your phone?
Yeah, so that, because my this wonky things are happening right now with our web connection. So I'm just concerned that I want to be able to do the voting thing without having to go back and forth.
Right, it should work. I mean, it's supposed to be a mobile friendly website.
Okay.
Are you able to access your email on your phone?
On my phone, yes.
Okay, click through the link. If you can open your email, we just resent the link to the voting to everyone.
Yeah, I did, and it looks like it's open. It's just that I didn't know if there was some kind of hocus pocus that I'm not doing correctly that will ultimately not let me vote on this thing and have the website open from the computer.
Yeah, we're going to here in a couple minutes. And so we'll all be able to test it out. At least
oh, good. Okay.
Help you troubleshoot. Yeah.
Thank you.
Just a few notes on text message voting. You'll need to text National Qual 661 to a certain number to be able to enable the text messaging option. I'm not sure if you want to do that now or if you want to wait until...
It says it's hooked up National Qual 661's presentation. Does that do it?
That sounds right.
Welcome to National Qual XX1's presentation. As soon as it displays the poll, we'll update this area to give you the voting options.
That sounds right.
Okay.
Okay.
Just checking. Thank you.
Yeah.
Hannah, I'm wondering, would Hannah or Caitlin be able to try to connect through the operator on the back end to see if there's an operator there and if she's taking calls for the make sure someone's there and putting people through for their webinar?
Yeah, I can do that. Okay. I'll do that right now.
Hey, Ashley, this is Mary Beth. If I didn't get a voting thing, that means I'm not voting this time. Is that correct?
Yes. We just sent it to subgroup one,
perfect.
Folks.
Okay.
That's right. Thank
just you. Just wanted to double check.
Yep.
Okay, great.
Hi, everyone. It's Ashley Wilbon from NQF again. Welcome back to our third and final session of the day. This session will be focused on re-evaluating two measures that by subgroup one that were submitted this cycle. And we're going to dive in here real shortly. We are working through a couple of technical issues for folks trying to get on the phone, so we'll continue to do that. We do have a little bit of slides to go through, and we're going to do a voting test as well for those of you in subgroup one who will be voting. So a couple of administrative things before we dive in. I also just wanted to check in to see if the developers were on the phone from Yale Core, CMS. If you want to speak, you will need to hit star one. And you can also chat us through the chat box, and please let us know if you're having any trouble getting through on the audio. Don't hear anyone. I see Lisa Suter on the webinar. Lisa, can you raise your hand if you see me? I mean, if you hear me, sorry. Okay. I see a note from Victoria. You guys are on. Are you dialed in to the phone number?
Some people have been joined, is not. That's why.
Can you just chat us and let us know if you're dialed in to the phone number? Because you won't be able to speak if you're just dialed in through Slack. So we'll go ahead and get started, and we'll have our team work with them in the background to make sure we can hear them and they'll be able to participate in the discussion. Just a couple of notes, as I mentioned. The process we'll be using for measure discussion will be the same as we used last cycle, so just a quick refresher. We'll have an interest staff person who will introduce the measure. Myself or Sam will be doing that today. And we'll have then the lead discussants to summarize some of the key concerns that were outlined in the discussion guide, as well as the PAs that were submitted by the subgroup. And then we will invite other subgroup members to provide comments. We'll then open it up for developers to give a couple minutes of initial response. At that time, we'll ask for the developers to provide a summary of their response, which has been included in the discussion guide in Appendix B. And then we will open it up to the full panel for discussion. So again, all members of the methods panel can discuss the measure, but we'll only be collecting the final votes from the subgroup. Any questions about that? And we will, as staff, be noting any folks who will need to be recused from the discussion, and that we have everyone on the line, and that we can establish quorum before we vote and discuss.
And Chris, just one additional small point, Dave Aarons here. I'll take care of watching the hands up and calling out people. I know Sherry and Joe are leading the discussion, but they may not be able to see that function, so I'll take care of that for them.
Okay. Thank you for that. The voting is going to be done via our Poll Everywhere software, which Hannah just sent an email to all of the Subgroup 1 members to make sure the instructions were at the top of your email. So if you all could kind of direct yourself to your email and make sure you find that, there's a link in there for you to click and make sure that you can get into the voting software. You may not see anything right now, but we'll be running a test here shortly to make sure that everyone can vote and that the software is working and it's ready for the time in the discussion that we'll be ready to vote. Just also noting that we will, over the next the rest of today and the remainder of the meeting tomorrow. Our discussion today will be focused on measures that were consensus not reached and measures where they did not pass but developers have submitted additional information for the methods panel to consider prior to submitting a final vote on the measure. So we will not be discussing all measures, again, just 7 measures that will be discussed as part of this meeting. The remainder of the measures that are not being discussed have all passed based on the initial preliminary analysis and will not be and have not been pulled for discussion and will not be re-adjudicated over this call. Those measures, by virtue of not being pulled for discussion by the methods panel members, have passed by consent calendar by the methods panel, and the vote submitted for the preliminary analysis will stand as the final vote for reliability and validity for the measure. That is until the standing committee evaluation. Just a note here that we will be considering transitioning to a full panel vote next cycle. If you recall, last cycle we did the shadow vote and found that there was actually quite a bit of consistency among the subgroup members and those members who weren't assigned to the measure, the subgroup members. So we're looking into that, and it's a process change that we're looking into potentially making in the future. But for now, it will just be the subgroup. So I would definitely encourage members of the panel who are not on the subgroup to try to tune into the discussion. Again, some of the issues are overarching. And even though you are not a part of the subgroup, we would still like to hear any input that you have on the measure based on your review of the discussion guide and listening to the discussion. So with that, I'm going to hand it over to Hannah to do a voting test for subgroup members, and we'll move into the measure. I'm going to hand it over to Sam after that to get started, and in the meantime, we'll work on making sure the developers are able to speak.
Okay, thank you, Ashley. This is Hannah. Can everyone hear me?
We can.
Wonderful. Okay, so we'll be doing a voting test first. I'll be opening the test vote now. If you have the link open on your desktop or your phone, you should see the question, during your morning commute, what is your preferred method of transportation? Okay, so I see 6 votes. So before we move forward, I'd like to confirm that which subgroup 1 members are on the line. I'm going to read through your names. If you could just reply and let us know if you're here. Daniel?
Yes, I'm here.
Jay Stella?
Here.
Matt Austin?
Here.
John Bott?
Here.
Joe Hyder? Okay, Joe's not in. Patrick Romano?
Here.
Thank you. Sherry?
Here.
And Terry?
Here.
Michael Soto? Oh, Mike is not available at this time, actually. And Larry?
Here.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you, everyone. So we should be getting 8 folks in.
This is Dave. So I just have a quick question. So when it says clear last response, if you click that, does that mean it registered the response or it clears it and didn't register?
That means it clears it and it didn't register. So don't clear your last response.
So when you vote, it's just the vote just stays up on the screen. It doesn't clear.
That's right. It will only change once I shift it on the back end.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm registering 9 votes. Did Joe or Mike join us? I'm not hearing any response.
This is Chicago. Maybe somebody voted twice.
Hannah, maybe try doing another test and see.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, yes. I'm going to clear the responses, and we'll ask you to fill in your vote again. Hi, sorry for that delay. still registering 9 votes. The team is just going to take a minute just to adjudicate this.
This is Patrick. I might be the guilty party if, so it,
okay.
it doesn't, prevent me from, in other words, I'm on my phone just as a backup in addition to being on the laptop, but it didn't seem to block the second vote. So is that's the way the system works? It allows
two votes? Yes, that is possible.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I won't do that again. Sorry.
Okay, maybe we should try one more time. Oh, go ahead. Oh, yeah, that is confusing. Sorry about that. Okay, we'll try one more time, and we'll hope for 8.
Hi, this is Katie.
Thank you for your cooperation.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Wonderful. I am on. Thank you. Hi, I will be the lead discussant for Yale Core for this measure. Thank you for your patience. I was having trouble being heard.
Thanks for joining us. Apologies for the difficulty.
Okay, I'm registering 5 votes now.
Anna, can you tell who the votes are from? Like, if you got a double vote from someone, would you be able to tell who it was? Or
no, unfortunately not.
Okay.
We're waiting on one more vote. Okay, we have 8 votes now. Thank you so much for your cooperation and your patience with that. I'll hand it over to Sam.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Hannah. Glad that we've got our testing up and going. And hello, friends and colleagues. It's been a little while since I've had the pleasure to be with the Scientific Methods panel. We've, Ashley has been writing solo for a bit here, and it's undoubtedly to my detriment. I don't get to interact with you nearly as much as I'd like to. So big thanks to Ashley for inviting me to join you today to introduce this measure. Just a quick reminder on order of operations. I'm going to introduce the measure. Lead discussants will then summarize the key concerns. We'll invite the subgroup members to comment. And then we'll hand it over to the developer to do 2 to 3 minutes of initial response, and then we'll open it up to the full panel. Once we've got through that, we'll, of course, move to voting, and then we'll move on to our next measure. Now, just to remind everyone where we're starting from, this is measure NQF 3559, hospital-level risk standardized improvement rate in patient-reported outcomes following elective primary total hip and or total knee arthroplasty. So the initial result of this is that the measure passed on reliability, but consensus was not reached on validity. So when we hand it over to our lead discussants, Sherry and Joe, we'll ask them to focus primarily on the validity concerns that were expressed by the panelists who reviewed this measure. Now, as was mentioned, the developer for this measure is Yale Core. And you'll find inside of your discussion guide a summary of the issues that were causes for concern amongst the panelists. Now, big thanks to Yale Core for putting together a very robust response to the concerns that were identified by the panel. That was attached to your meeting materials as well, and I hope that you have all reviewed that. But I imagine that we'll be going through that in some detail. Just as a couple of highlights about the measure, the testing that was conducted, excuse me, just one second. The testing that was conducted for reliability I was both at the MeSH score and the data element level. So looking at the test retest reliability of the hip dysfunction and osteoarthritis outcome score for joint replacement, or Hughes Jr., as well as the knee injury and osteoarthritis outcome score for joint replacement, Coos Jr., as it were. They also did assess consistency, and those produced some pretty good results overall, and hence panel not identifying too many problems with reliability. Signal-to-noise analysis was conducted at the score level. I won't go through the main concerns associated with reliability, as those were as it's past reliability, and those were largely addressed by the developer, but we can wade into those during discussion if the panel wishes to do so. Now, on validity, as I mentioned, consensus was not reached. This was, as is appropriate for all pro PMs, this measure was tested at both the data element and score levels for validity. Now, looking at responsiveness, external validity, and floor and ceiling effects for both the Hughes Jr. and Coos Jr. instruments. I won't go through the results in too much detail because I think our lead discussants will likely want to get into that themselves. So at this point, I'll hand it over to Sherry and Joyce to lead our discussion.
Who wants to go first?
Oh, you can arm wrestle on that one, Sherry. But as you chimed in, why don't you go ahead?
Oh, dear. Okay, so one of the first questions I had for the measure developer and for NQF was, this is created as a composite score. And I am always concerned that I'm getting NQF's definitional things incorrect. Because when you're creating a composite across multiple items that are supposed to assess the same construct, does NQF count that as a composite? In this case, knee and hip function.
Yeah, this is Ashley. I think that's a good question. It's actually a question that we have that I think Dave Fella brought to our attention and is actually at the bottom of the slide about whether or not this measure qualifies as a composite. I think, and Sam, I'm going to ask for your help a little bit on this because I think we have had this question come up before with propions that have multiple items. Do we also sometimes classify them as both, or can it be both? Or I'm going to lean on you a little bit for this one, Sam.
Yeah, that's a really tricky question. I wish I had a better answer for you. And I can't think of examples of where we've had multiple items that could potentially roll up into a single score that have used as in this case, two separate scoring instruments. So I unfortunately don't have a good answer.
Well, here's why it's relevant, because it would, for people like me, it would be weird to have data element reliability, for example, in these multi-item things that are supposed to assess an underlying construct like knee function or hip function. So you wouldn't go after data element reliability anyway. And so you're only doing score level reliability. And then there's the patient and the hospital or whatever facility level reliability questions too, and that was a concern when I was thinking about the reliability piece of this. You know, what happened to the across items within patient part of the error term in the denominator. And so when you're thinking those things through, now that, because we haven't had that discussion yet and it wouldn't be unfair to apply those new, you know, criteria around those things, but we're creating composites. That piece of the error term, when you're aggregating it up to the next unit, becomes very relevant for the error term and how you're comparing things to things like validity variables. So that's probably, if we can't answer it for this round, then we have to just ignore it. But that's something probably we should put in the parking lot and come back to in future discussions. So having said that, there is concern raised, and I'm reading this from the notes from others in the compiled notes on concerns raised by the SNP on validity. One is attribution, and it's relevant to this business about, well, where is the error variance and where is the real true score variation? Attributing joint function changes, differences in joint function of the hospital versus rehab services versus something that can happen in the interval as long as 9 months to a year following surgery. So which piece of the variance belongs to the hospital in terms of attribution versus whatever else they got after the surgery with that long of a time interval? So that's one concern that was raised. Shall I go on, or shall I just blast through these and then have ask the developer to respond, or do you want to do them one by one?
Sure, Sherry, this is Ashley. Go ahead and go through, and we'll see if Joe has anything to add, and then we can open it up for the developer.
Okay, there's another concern raised that suggests the exclusion of staged procedures might eliminate up to 43% of the procedures, and the measure should include from unstaged procedures. I'm not exactly clear what that refers to, I didn't bring that one up, but that was another concern raised. The exclusion analysis noted that data weren't provided in the same way that there was a consort diagram would have helped on how much the exclusions affected the performance scores. There were questions raised about the 25 case volume threshold and what that was based on, and what happens when the facility falls below the 25 case recommendation. Were they excluded, or did you do some other kind of analysis on those data, and did you examine the inclusion exclusion of those 20, the smaller volume hospitals? Then another concern that came up was about risk adjustment. The model was developed including hospitals, wasn't used for reliability, validity, and missing data, for example, and I'm not reading this one right. Hospitals with low caseloads were not recommended for the measure. Did the developers do a sensitivity analysis, which is related to the issue I just raised, to test the impact of excluding hospitals from risk adjustment, the risk adjustment development sample? And then another concern was meaningful differences. There was some question about how much of the variation could be established meaningful differences between hospitals in the top quartile, for example. And finally, there's an issue about missing data. Two people raised concerns about missing data, and that only the complete data were analyzed without accounting for what's likely fairly extensive missingness. And whether that's actually missing at random or missing not at random. And so that's kind of the gist. It says measure developer response in the piece I'm looking at, but I didn't get the robust response that Sam was talking about, so I don't know where that lives, but apologies for not having read that in advance. One other comment. Is the data element validity presented refers to studies in the literature at the patient level. But again, I'm not concerned about that because this is supposed to be a composite measure. The end.
Thanks.
Okay. Joe, did you have anything else that you would like to add?
Hi, Jim. I think we were trying to figure out if Joe was on or not. I thought I heard him, but Hannah was saying she thought he was not on. So if that's the case, then we can open it up to other subgroup members.
Okay. So are we...
Not here, Joe. So let's go ahead and open up.
Okay. Well, this is Dave Sella. Maybe I'll start then. I'm one of the subgroup members, and Sherry really focused on the measure validity and wasn't concerned about data element, but I'm actually quite concerned about the data element, and maybe I can explain why. So I'm sort of wondering if I should talk in the weeds or up from 30,000 feet. But let me start at 30,000 feet and then get into a little bit of the weeds. At the data element level, a little background for those of you who don't know the who's and the coos very well. The who's and coos JR were developed kind of off the grid of the developers of the who's and the coos at Hospital for Special Surgery, and they combine pain and function into one measure. And they do that, I guess, to have one score and a short measure. And by doing that, given that this is a performance measure that really relies upon patient self-report, by doing that, they conflate pain and function. And in many cases, particularly with knees, the recovery is different for pain as it is for function. And although they used a Roche measurement technique to create items that would hold together well, at least in the sample they tested, that's not necessarily how they'll perform later. So there'll be a lot of error introduced, and it's a short measure with a pretty good size ceiling effect. So it's not clear that it'll work very well for people that come in at the relatively high function or low pain level. Again, mixing the two. So one of the things that the Who's and Coos developers did in collaboration with the late Barbara Jandek was they went ahead and developed short versions of the Who's and the Coos that keep pain and function separate. But those short versions were developed and published after CMS had allowed the JR to qualify for bundled payment. So JR kind of got in the hopper. But there are these, I would think, from a PRO person's perspective, better measures that are available and actually in the FORCE data set that the developers could use to allow pain and function to remain separately measured with still short measures. The reason they went with the very short measure was because the TEP recommended it. But there's another, maybe less important issue, but I'll mention it, is that the JR versions, the ones that are being proposed, are really only used in orthopedics and only in a subset of orthopedists. Not used in rheumatology, for example, where there are clinical quality measures that rely on the same issues of pain and function in the hips and knees for osteoarthritis. So I think there's a real strong case to be made for reconsidering using these 12-item versions. They take 2 minutes per person as opposed to 1 minute per person, so they're not, it's not that much more of a burden. And I'm not sure how much the TEP was asked about using the 12 versus the 6 or 7 item JR versions. But one of the other benefits, and this is getting a little bit into the weeds, and I'll remind everyone about my conflict that I said at the beginning of the meeting. I am on the board of a nonprofit Founders Health Organization. But one of the other benefits of having pain and function separately measured at the patient level is that you can then allow the orthopedic community flexibility in what they use. They can use the 12-item version or the full who's and coos, or they could use a promise measure. And many of them have already converted over to promise measures because they don't have that problem of the ceiling effect. So, I think it's a good, submission. And I came down on low on validity because I think there's a much more valid way to get information from patients about pain and function, reduce ceiling effects, and leave more assessment available to the community so that they can use the 12, they can use PROMIS, or anything that can be linked. The WOMAC, including the WOMAC, that could be linked to these pain and physical function measures. We'll make a happier orthopedic community, make for better registry connectivity and better understanding along, you know, down the road. Otherwise, what's likely to happen is that everyone will converge on the JR, mixing pain and function together, and this opportunity will be lost. So that's why I came in where I came in on this. Are there other, you know, minor comments I might chime in with based upon where the discussion goes, but I'll leave it at that.
Yes, thanks, Dave. I've got Matt, Larry, and Sherry in that order, and I'm always will check with Sherry as the discussion leader if you want to stay at that spot in the queue or if you have some immediate response.
Well, I kind of do have an immediate response because it seemed like, Dave, you were raising some separable issues. One is dimensionality within the hip and knee osteoarthritis outcomes measures. So there's dimensionality because, for example, the knee includes a stiffness dimension. It's a single item, but it's a stiffness plus pain and daily function. And the dimensions are differentially represented with item content. But are you raising a concern? I was kind of under the impression that we were evaluating what we're seeing, not what we could see, and that's a question for NQF. Are we evaluating the measure as we're staring at it, or are we evaluating it in a larger context of how? What would you choose if you were, you know, opting for the ideal measure for hip and knee function post-intervention and recovery? Because go ahead, Ashley, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, sorry. I was just going to say we're evaluating the measure as is and as it has been presented to us.
Okay, and then so my question back to Dave Sella is are you raising concerns about multidimensionality within the knee survey and whether those have been are accurate for reflecting in terms of content validity, reflecting all the content? Is that the concern? Or is it, because if you shorten some of these measures as we did for the SF12, for example, you destroy the internal dimensionality, but you still have have construct validity at the overall score level. I'm a little bit confused about
the issues
you're raising.
My vote was low on validity, and it was for four reasons, really, one of which was this missed opportunity, but three reasons that I gave before that are the concerns about the missing data, the proxy reporting issue, and the ceiling effect of the data element.
Okay, great. All right. I just wanted some clarity.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, Matt.
Yeah, good afternoon, everyone. So I have maybe a couple of questions for maybe NQF staff more than the measure developer, and that's just to sort of interpret maybe two sort of rules or guidelines. One is for the validity testing, they provided both measure score validity testing and data element validity testing. If we're comfortable with one but not with the other, how should we proceed? And the second question is, when we talk about data element validity testing and needing to look at all critical data elements, does NQF have a definition of what's included and not included as a critical data element?
Hi, Matt. This is Ashley. So given the different types of, for your first question on the different types of validity testing, I would say, if there is a concern with one of the kinds of validity testing, that you should incorporate that into your evaluation, similar as you would of considering, you know, all the various components of validity, risk adjustment, exclusions, missing data. All of those components are also kind of subsets or subsections of validity. So, we don't have any specific guidance on how those should be weighed, but you certainly should take into consideration how all those different components weigh against each other and whether or not that concern is significant enough to impact your vote, one way or the other.
Okay.
So the second question around critical data elements, I was actually looking for the specific language, but it's essentially, I mean, we consider, you know, the critical data elements, those data elements required to compute the measure. So essentially all of them would be critical, but definitely the numerator data elements. I'm sorry, I can't quote it off the top of my head, but give me a second to find it and I can find it for you. We don't have any specific requirements on, you know, if they did five of the six or, you know, how we, you know, we certainly have submissions where, you know, they've done, you know, maybe five of the 10 data elements and reviewers have found that to be sufficient. And I think the word critical is somewhat subjective and our language is not, I think, quite definitive on that, although we do provide some examples in our description of how we define critical data elements. And I'll find that language for you in just a second and I can share that back with the group.
Okay, that'd be helpful. I just wanted to make sure I'm being fair in how I'm applying that term, critical. Okay, thank you.
Sure, thanks.
Okay, Larry's up. Hi, everybody. The caveat here is patient-reported outcome measures are not something that I know an awful lot about, and I'm sure Sherry will point that out at some point. Hi, Sherry. But a couple thoughts. One, when I looked at this measure, it struck me that I think this is a CMS measure, correct?
Yes, I believe Yale was contracted by CMS.
Right. So it struck me that if you look at the measures that are currently being used in comprehensive joint replacement program, by CMS, that I think the only outcome measure that they have currently is the risk standardized complication rate. And I think that when I evaluate measures, a couple things that I look at, and I know this is not typically what we, you know, the typical schema, but I look at things like how much of a need do we have for a measure like this? And my understanding of most of the episode-based payment the bundled care program that CMS has, as well as the accountable care, the quality measures that are being used for ACOs. I don't know of very many, if any, patient-reported outcome measures. So there's clearly a need for this kind of a measure, in my mind. The second thing that I think of when I evaluate a measure is, you know, we talked a lot about cutoff values and criteria that we would like to be able to use. And I think that's kind of hard. But one of the things I do is I sort of compare a measure that I'm evaluating compared to all the other measures that I've looked at for the last couple years, both on this methods panel as well as the standing committee that I used to serve on. And so I look at the quality of the measure. And I know that's sort of a gut-level thing, but to me that's important because I just sort of put it in the context. So when I looked at this measure, again, it occurred to me that there's a need for this type of a measure in the performance metrics that are being used by CMS because we need to look not just at complication rates and cost and process measures. We also need to look at patient-reported outcome measures. And secondly, I looked at the quality of the measure, and I kind of thought it was at least as good, if not better, than the majority of the measures that I've looked at. And I think since the one that consensus not reached was on validity, I'll sort of limit my specific comments on validity. So even though this is a composite measure, it boils down to it's an all or none measure. So it's essentially ends up being a logistic regression model. And they use the standard approach to looking at the validity of the prediction model in a validation data set. And they found reasonably good discrimination with a p-value of 0.69. Not terrific, but it's not uncommon to see stats in that area for models for any kind of anything other than mortality. Mortality models typically have C statistics that are better, but other models that are not mortality models, this is not unusual. And then the calibration, they looked at calibration using calibration plots, and those seemed pretty good. And then they also used another standard approach as well, and the calibration there was good as well in the validation data. So to me, at least that the score level validity seemed to be good, and I think we were all agreed that score level reliability was okay. So that was the reason that I voted to pass this measure. And again, I don't think it really matters whether it's a high or moderate, but in my mind, it's sort of a binary decision, and I voted pass for those reasons.
No hands up. Back to Sherry and Joe, I guess.
I always have to be careful that I don't hit the off button while I'm trying to hit the unmute button. I think the big issue, I think for me is the missing data. And I think Dave Stella raised this question that more than 50% of hospitals with more than 25 eligible patients and about 70% of all hospitals had missing either PRO and or risk variable data. And so despite their propensity score analysis where they compared those with and without missing data, there's still a main concern about a pretty substantial bias in the data presented. And so that I think remains a big concern of mine. And then I was also concerned that there's the association with the risk standardized complication rate was the NQF 1550 was described in the text as a correlation, but the data presented were figure one, for example, had a box plot. So, and it wasn't clear, I may have missed it, but it wasn't clear the analysis that generated these data was provided in detail. And so there's considerable variability at the mean, and a plot of the association of sort of a pass-fail of each one of these measures at the hospital level would have been really helpful, along with a standard error bar, even in the 123 hospital sample. If we could just have seen the magnitude of the error there, it would have helped sort of figure out how hospitals compare to each other and how this might be used or not used. And again, I did miss the response from the measure developer, so if that was addressed in that response, I apologize.
This is Dave Seller again. I think we're supposed to turn to the developers if there are no more comments, but just to say that I share the concern about missing data. I also think this just shouldn't be proxy reports used. But the other thing is the orthopedic community is really getting on board with getting patient-reported outcome data, so that I'm optimistic that in the future there will be better quality data collection because at present there is compared to the data that were analyzed for this submission. One of the problems is that what's being used isn't just this one particular set of questions, and this one particular set of questions is not going to easily be mapped to others, whereas a different choice that could be done with the same data that were used here from the fourth TJR registry could be linked to other things that are being measured now. So it's maybe a somewhat out of order suggestion to the developers that a change in the actual element could bode very well for a good participation rate of the orthopedic community and remove that missing data problem downstream that otherwise I think will still be there because people are committed to other other measurements.
Thanks, Dave. Yes, let's open it up to the developer. And I did want to just point out, because I think perhaps there was a question, that the developer's response is included in Appendix B of the discussion guide. It starts on page 38. We would ask the developers if you could, summarize your responses in Appendix B. I think many of the subgroup members reviewed it, but I think some may have not had an opportunity. So if you could do that, that would be very helpful.
Actually, could I also ask that the developer speak to the issue of attribution to the hospital, given the time window following surgery is a fairly broad 9 to 12 months is quite wide, and that could have a lot to do with rehab and other things. Can they also address that? Thanks.
Sure. Thank you.
Hello, this is Katie Valstracy from Yale Corps. Can you hear me?
We can. Thank you.
Wonderful. So thank you for this opportunity to speak. I would like to start by just giving the context with which this measure was developed, specifically in terms of stakeholder input. This measure was developed, testing results were presented to, and a great deal of input was provided by our technical expert panel. We had a technical working group that has worked with us over the life of the development of this measure. There were stakeholders versus public comments. During the creation of the CJR model under CMMI, which was the Comprehensive Care for Joint Replacement model, which was the mechanism by which these patient-reported outcome data were collected and submitted, required and involved a great deal of input from our TEP, but also from the hip and knee societies in terms of data to be collected, data elements to be included for risk adjustment, and the PROM survey instruments used. I noted earlier a question by one of the panel members about the choice of PROMs. There was a great deal of discussion early on from the TEP about different PROMs. There was an evaluation of including the WOMAC, including who's in cruise, the full version, et cetera. So these decisions, the decisions around PROMs, the decisions around the data elements chosen went through a particularly rigorous stakeholder examination, evaluation, and we received a great deal of input. Likewise, there is, for this measure, a particularly important feedback and input from patients. Not only did we have patients on our technical expert panel, but we engaged a patient working group that would allow us to get input specifically from a larger number of individuals who have undergone either a total hip or a total knee arthroplasty, and in several cases, multiple such procedures. So I did want to put this in that context. As I've listened, I've heard a number of different concerns around the validity of this measure. I will say that each one that was mentioned in the last half hour was addressed in the 12-page response we provided to the panel, but I'm happy to try to quickly address them here and then ask that, if someone needs even more detail, I'm happy to provide it. I heard concern about attribution of this measure. This is a hospital-level measure because we are hoping with this measure to attain the following goal, to really capture the full spectrum of care And to incentivize collaboration and shared responsibility, I think we note that a surgeon can do a terrific job, but if there is not a coordination of care around other providers within the hospital, around discharge planning, et cetera, then a patient may not receive the positive outcomes that they are expecting and that their surgeon is expecting. So we are really expecting that that this, as a hospital measure, will allow patients to then receive a high quality of care across that spectrum. It is a follow-up. The follow-up post-assessment is a 9 to 12-month post-assessment because we do want to make sure that a patient has had the time for a full recovery, whether it is a knee or a hip replacement. And our technical expert panel and other consultant experts indicated to us that they thought that that follow-up would sufficiently cover that. I heard a concern about staged procedures. I will tell you that we are unclear where the 43% number came from in terms of the panel. It is our experience in our data that the number of patients who may have these type of procedures, stage procedures within a year of each other is about 7%. We noticed also globally there are some studies coming out of Sweden that mirror this exact percentage. I will say that in our data, 4.17% of the patients with complete pro and risk variable data were removed because of the stage procedures, and we did not do a sensitivity analysis for this reason. Our very concern about a stage procedure within a second procedure within a year of the first is that we don't know how to interpret that outcome because of the overlap of the recovery period. I heard a concern about a 25 case volume threshold. This threshold was chosen because we expect that in public reporting such a threshold would be applied, and certainly it is applied in many of the claims-based measures with which this measure is intentionally harmonized. So this is not an exclusion. This is, in fact, a reporting and expected or recommended reporting threshold. I will say that from our data, while 33% of hospitals conducted fewer than 25 elective primary hip or knee procedures, the number of procedures that this represents for the overall number of hip or knee procedures that occurred across the country in hospitals during that measurement period is 3.14%. So while hospitals with fewer than 25 procedures appears to be around 33%, it was only 3% of procedures themselves that then did not get included in the measure. I heard a concern about the choice of Cruz Jr. and Cruz Jr., and I will simply reiterate what I said as I began speaking, which is that both of these POMs went through a rigorous examination by our technical expert panel, as well as a public comment period when the CJR model was being proposed. And they continued to be the measure that was supported through the development and final testing of this measure. I heard a concern about missing data. In this measure, one of the things that we recognize as developers of a patient-reported outcome-based performance measure is that, unlike claims-based measures, data need to be taken directly from or gathered directly from patients so that there is a voluntary nature to this. We have proposed in our responses, and certainly as we continue to consider PROPMs, that there is certainly ways to improve the response rate, and we believe that the CJR model has really provided a proof of concept of how this can be approached. We do have, for this measure, as you note, an approach to response bias. We recognize that as the collection of PROPMs increase, as hospitals get better about collecting them, as providers get better about collecting them, then, you know, likely that will never be or hard to get to 100%. So we do believe that has to be something we pay attention to, and so we did do a statistical approach to address potential response bias. You will note in our results that we did not find a large difference in measure results when we applied this response bias approach statistically, but we believe it is an important consideration and recommend that be part of the measure. I will also note that we did, in the response bias approach, identify and deal differently with both cases in which no PRO data were provided and cases in which incomplete data were provided. So address both missing data and non-response, which are, of course, two different issues. Let me just address what I think are the two other things I heard. There is a concern about proxy reporting. We expect in an elective procedure, such as this elective primary hip or knee replacement surgery, that proxy responses will be quite low. They were certainly low in the data that we used for the development of this measure. However, because of the nature of voluntary reporting, we did, and this was part of the requirements around the CJR final rule and data that would be collected, we did allow for proxy responses because it did provide us with additional information for patients undergoing this procedure. And lastly, let me address critical data elements. We also provided some detail in our response when the scientific methods panel noted this concern. We have, as you saw, provided the data element reliability and validity information on the WHO's Junior and the WHO's Junior. The claims data that are used both to identify procedures in the denominator and also are used for some of the risk variable comorbidities are those which are regularly audited by CMS. We have other claims-based measures in which we have done medical chart review in order to validate this type of data. So there have been there are many ways in which we can have confidence in these claims data. With the data elements that are risk variables in the model that come from CJR hospitals through the collection of patient-reported outcome data, those particular risk variables were vetted by a thorough literature review by our technical expert panel. We did a medical chart review that looked at the reliability and the feasibility of these variables in hospital data collection. So given those inputs, as well as continued support from our tech clinical experts and our patients, we feel confident that those variables are in fact valuable choices here. I am going to ask if Lisa Suter has anything to add before I conclude my comments.
Paul?
Can people hear me?
A little faint, but yes.
Okay, I will turn up my volume. Is that better?
Better, yes.
Great, thank you. First of all, I want to thank you all for the opportunity to comment. Katie addressed very robustly the issues raised. I wanted to provide just a little bit more historical context about the concerns. I'm getting a lot of feedback and background noise. So I just wanted to let people know that this measure, CMS embarked on this measure many years ago, even before the Comprehensive Care for Joint Replacement model. It actually, the initial technical expert panel didn't have short form versions and made a decision to go with the HOOS and COOS full form versions. The technical expert panel recommended those given the other limitations and proprietary nature of other surveys at the time. Public comment and orthopedic stakeholder feedback actually were the ones that identified the short form versions that were developed at the hospital for specific hospital for special surgery, where they actually created the short form surveys with the actual joint replacement patients undergoing joint replacement as opposed to the HOOS and COOS, which were developed in knee osteoarthritis patients broadly. And the patients were deeply involved in the development of those short forms. Those short form surveys were brought back to CORE and to CMS with a request that we consider shorter forms to minimize burden. And through a tremendous amount of stakeholder input, as Katie already alluded to, the decision was to move forward with those short form versions. I want to say, in addition to a patient work group and patient technical expert panel members and two public comments, we have also had multiple orthopedic societies, including the AAOS and the American Academy for Hip and Knee Surgeons and the Hip Society and the Knee Society, comment on this measure, provide feedback on this measure, have representatives engaged in this measure, and each of those organizations, you know, supported the measure moving forward with shorter forms, acknowledging that there are some limitations, but, you know, there were individual orthopedic surgeons with communication with the leadership of those organizations involved in providing advice to us as developers. I'm not saying that those societies endorse these measures. I would not, you know, be so bold as to say that, but they have engaged in the development and provided us feedback throughout. So we are very appreciative of all the engagement that the orthopedic community has given us throughout the development of this measure, including a summit where the orthopedic community came together and recommended the limited number of high-value risk variables to collect prospectively as part of the joint replacement model. So it's hard to reflect how much went into building this measure, and, you know, I'm sure all measures can be improved, and we are very happy to hear the committee's feedback about how to improve this measure, and we want to make it better. But recognizing that this measure has had a, you know, almost a 10-year arc from its inception through having data collected prospectively through a voluntary model that incentivized hospitals to collect the data, not require them to participate in, you know, in a proprietary registry or other, you know, payment requiring process, but to submit the data in, you know, in many different ways that allowed them less flexibility. It's been a privilege to be a part of that, and I just wanted people to have a little additional context to
what went into the development of this measure. Thank you.
Okay, we appreciate that. Just a very important time check here. We're 25 minutes to the hour. We have one more measure yet to get in before the scheduled adjournment. Sherry, do you see a path to getting your group to voting pretty quickly here?
I think so. I have two remaining, and it's just a remaining concern because I've now had a chance to go over the response by the developers and listen to their presentation. I have two remaining concerns. One is attribution, because even though the TEP is a very useful thing to have for face validity terms, it would have helped a lot to have a within versus between facility variance test, like an interclass correlation coefficient. That would have helped a lot with the attribution issue, because I think a year out, a lot of things have happened that can contribute to the patient's outcome that may or may not have anything to do with the hospital, including social support and other things, so on. So, and I do remain concerned about missing data, because HCAHPS has been around for a long time, and now patients are getting more and more surveys. So, you know, using these things on the ground has to be held in context with the 15 to 30% response rate that HCAHPS remains stuck at. So those are just two remaining concerns, and I don't have anything further to add. I don't know if Dave Sella or Joseph or anybody else has anything remaining.
Well, if I could, this is Dave. I just want to say I have a lot of respect for the Yale group and Lisa and Katie in particular, and have worked with you, them in other contexts. And I understand probably more than most what it's like to have a 7 or 10 year arc of development work. And so, you know, I said what I said, you know, with that knowledge and not to take it lightly. I wouldn't have said anything if it was just a matter of, is it good enough? Yeah, it's good enough. It's probably going to go fine. But the downstream implications of not doing what I think can be done with existing data are significant, and it's unfortunate. That was really, you know, and I think the committee just has to decide if that's what it wants to vote on, or the missing data issue, or not. I think this can be fixed in a way that keeps it much more open for the orthopedic community. They're going to be a much happier group, maybe I'll put it to you a different way. Can you see any way, 2-3 years down the road, to be able to say, okay, you don't have to administer the who's they are. You could administer the 12 item short forms the promise and approximate, the same benefit. And, you know, if link goes up, I don't have a lot of optimism that can work or that it would ever be done, and that'll change, it changes the landscape forever. Although I do, you know, listening to Lisa's description, I can see what happened all along the way, and it made sense. But it's a little bit now like, you know, like I'm saying, there's a better drug. And are we going to go ahead and say this is the drug that's going to go in the formulary, or are we going to put the better drug in the formulary because it's right there and it can be shipped? So it's, you know, I don't know if that's in or out of scope, frankly, and that's part of why I wanted to have this this discussion. This was actually going to be one of the general topics for discussion, but we decided, since it was only related to this particular submission, that we would have it here in the submission.
So this is Lisa Suter again. I'll just acknowledge that, and I don't know if CMS is on the line, I could not possibly speak for, you know, what is going to happen with this measure 2 or 3 years down the road, but all of CMS's measures are maintained with contractors that do annual review and updates to the measure that reflect the, you know, science that is out there. And I think this does, you know, I would assume that this measure would go into reevaluation on a regular basis as well. I don't know how, you know, it's a lot different to make a code update, you know, when the ICD-10 codes are expanded or changed, than it would be to change an entire patient-reported outcome instrument.
Yeah.
But the
only example I have, Lisa, is the PH29, and I can tell you there it has not been possible to modify the use of the PHQ-9 is the only measure that qualifies for that particular quality measure, even going through maintenance cycles. That's part of why I'm concerned. Anyway, I think, let's be optimistic that CMS will look at it differently than the developer of the PHQ-9 measures, but I don't know.
Hi, this is Ashley. I'm wondering, the subgroup one still ready to vote? I just want to be respectful of the time, and we have another developer group on the line. I'd like to make sure we do due diligence for that measure as well. If there are any other kind of quick lingering issues we could mention, or if the subgroup is still ready to vote based on the additional information submitted by the developer in the discussion to date.
Ashley, I'm so sorry. This is Katie Balistrati from Yale Court. If I can just note one thing in response to the comment we just heard, there was a concern about ICC testing or the lack of it. And in fact, the measure score is based on an ICC, which is about 0.25, my analysts are telling me. So we do want to note that, in fact, we have that data.
Thank you. Okay. Subgroup one, can we call a vote?
I think so.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you, everyone. Voting is now open on measure 3559, hospital level risk standardized improvement rate in patient reported outcomes following illustrious primary PA and PKA. Reminder, this is a rating for validity. Okay, I will now share my screen to show the results. Okay, as you can see, we had 5 ratings for moderate and 3 ratings for low. This means the measure passes on validity.
Great.
Review another measure during this time, 0715, standardized adverse event ratio for children younger than 18 of age undergoing cardiac catheterization from Boston Children's Hospital. I know they have been holding on the line, and I want to be respectful of folks' time and make sure that we give them an opportunity to review, an adequate opportunity to review and discuss their measure. Is it Lisa? Are you there? Can you hear us?
Can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Okay, great.
Can I just ask, are you guys, I know this is a tough position for us all to be in, and I apologize for running over. Would you guys be able to join us tomorrow for discussion of your measure, or is today, are you locked in for today?
We're happy to do whatever works for the committee.
Okay. I'd like to let us take some time as a team and with the co-chairs to look at the agenda for tomorrow. And we will get back to you this evening, and we're going to add you to the agenda for tomorrow. I just want to make sure there's enough opportunity for the committee to consider your measure, as well as for you to give, a response and engage in some discussion, while also being respectful of folks' time and ending our day today at 5. So I really appreciate your flexibility, and we'll be in touch very shortly after the close of the call to work out a time that you guys can join us tomorrow.
Ashley, this is Patrick Romano.
Hi.
I guess there isn't any way to go past 5, because pushing to early tomorrow morning would be 6 a.m. on the West Coast.
Right. We did actually move subgroup 1 measures to the afternoon for that reason. So we'll kind of rejigger things around a bit. We have some developers who have some kind of restrictions on what times they can attend, and so we'll take a look at things and move things around, and we're definitely keeping that in mind. Patrick, thanks for bringing that to our attention. Dave and Dave, do you have any other comments or thoughts about that for the group before we wrap up for the day?
No, it's a tough spot. I mean, I feel very badly about asking the developers particularly to adjust schedule, but I also don't want them to feel shortchanged in terms of the opportunity for discussion and for them to talk through some of the responses. So I think all of us will just have to remember tomorrow to keep the discussion focused, keep the comments as brief as possible, because we'll be squeezing in one more thing beyond what we had originally scheduled.
And this is Patrick again. I just, for the benefit of other folks, the developers provided quite a detailed and lengthy response to the comments on pages 49 through 59 of the discussion guide. So everyone should take a look at that material in advance of our discussion.
Thanks. This is Dave C. Nothing to add. That sounds good. Let's try to keep the same start and end time parameters tomorrow, and we can just be efficient.
Okay. The team will take a look at the agenda, and we'll touch base with the co-chairs and with the developers this evening to make sure we're on track for tomorrow. And we're at about 10 minutes before the top of the hour, and I think we're going to go ahead and open it up for public comments for a few minutes, and then we'll go ahead and adjourn for the day. And at this time, if you would like to comment, you can enter them into the chat box of the webinar or press star 1, although I think you've been having some difficulty with that. But if you're able to raise your hand if you're on the webinar or enter your comment in the chat box, we'll be sure to relay your comments and find a way for you to speak if needed. Okay, I think hearing none, I think we'll go ahead and adjourn for the day. I did just want to thank everyone for being such troopers and being engaged for such a marathon webinar for today. I do think this having been over webinar, I don't think that we lost very much by not being in person. So I really appreciate that, and we look forward to more discussion tomorrow and getting through all the measures. So thanks, everyone, and have a good evening, and we'll talk to you tomorrow morning.
Thanks, Ashley.
Bye. Team, if you want to just stay on for the post-conference for a second, that would be great.
Oops, I just went off the web. Well, I guess...